Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
This podcast is part of the Planet Broadcasting Network.
Visit planetbroadcasting.com for more podcasts from our great mates.
Hey, what's up? Welcome to another episode of Serious Issues, a weekly comic book podcast. My name is Andrew Levins, and joining me through the powers of space, time, and magic, or Skype, is Siobhan Coombs.
Hello. How are you?
Welcome to the internet.
It's a terrible place to be. Thank you for having me.
So we just had Free Comic Book Day in Sydney and indeed all the world. Siobhan, it's like your... It's your Christmas, but like, no, what's like the bad thing about, like...
It's the Christmas that I have to organize and I don't get any presents. So I get to make sure everyone else is having fun, but I have no fun. And it's very stressful.
Cool.
No, I had fun. I had fun because I got to chat to like Tom Taylor for ages. Yeah, it sounds like parenting. It kind of is. You're all my children for one day.
Shouts to Tom Taylor for being a gentleman.
And a
good conversationalist.
He gave me a print of a Phoenix comic that he's got coming out soon, the cover of it by Art Adams, and he signed it to Nate, my boyfriend Nate, and it said, to me, my ex-Nate, Tom Taylor.
Like, thanks, excellent Tom. Shouts to anybody who came to Kings on Saturday. It was so good to see so many listeners come and say hey.
Yeah, I got a message from someone afterwards who was like, I was too scared to come and say hi. But hi.
Amazing.
Thanks.
I got someone commenting on my photo saying, thanks for giving my son a yo-yo or some shit. And I was like, why didn't you say that it was... Yeah, whatever.
Would have given him 2 yo-yos.
Classic. Exactly. So what we do on this show every single week is we review all the comics that came out the week beforehand. And we mentioned them earlier. We'll mention them again. Every single comic that we talk about on the podcast comes to us courtesy of the good folks at King's Comics. If you ever find yourself in Sydney, come visit us, 310 Pitt Street, Sydney, or kingscomics.com. We begin every episode with a little segment called First Things First. And... there were a lot of number ones this week, and that's what First Things First is all about. We review all this new series that started and let you know which are the ones that you should be picking up or paying attention to. And I have a fairly good idea that everybody listening right now may have picked up the first number one we're about to talk about. And that
you
is
got to assume so.
The Avengers number one by Jason Aaron, Ed McGuinness, Mark Morales, and David Curiel, out through Marvel this week. Not only is it the first issue of The Avengers, it's also the 691st issue of The Avengers.
Because, the big 691. Marvel are doing...
they're doing both now. Let's talk about Earth's Mightiest Heroes. Back again, this is the new lineup of Thor, Captain Marvel, Captain America, She-Hulk, Doctor Strange, Iron Man, Ghost Rider, a.k.a. Robbie Reyes, and Black Panther.
That's a good team. It's a good lineup.
And... not, this is, yes, a new series, but more importantly, it's a sequel of sorts to Jason Aaron's Marvel Legacy one-shot that came out last year. Kind of ties into the first assembly of the Avengers a million years ago. So we have mirrored versions of our Avengers team in Odin and Phoenix and someone like who has the Star Brand that allows them to become Hulk. There's a Sorcerer Supreme. There's an Iron Fist. There's a Black Panther. It's bonkers.
It's bonkers. But it's the best team ever. I love it.
The good kind of bonkers. Siobhan, what did you think of this first issue?
You know, I wanted to try and reread it before we recorded, but I only just read the rest of the stuff, which I'm sure I didn't read everything. But I sort of didn't enjoy it that much when I was reading it, which I was like, oh, that seems wrong. I love Ed McGuinness. I love Jason Aaron. But it just was like, something bigger than the Celestials. Fucking whoopity-doo.
Yeah, there is something...
That was my kind of response.
I mean, it is inevitable that the Avengers will face like an Earth-threatening threat.
Yes.
An Earth-ending threat, that is. But it is kind of boring when we get this immediately after, ten that we've had in the last few months. But what I did enjoy, and I this is like my favorite part of when new Avengers or Justice League runs start, is that we get the like core members. And I feel like this has always been something that happens... with Batman, Superman, and Wonder Woman, like they sit down at a big table and they decide who's going to be on the team. We didn't quite get that in this, but we did get a version of it with the newly worthy Thor, the return to his own timeline, thawed out Captain America. He's no longer the evil Hydra Cap, and also out of his own coma, Tony Stark. So you have the three of them reuniting over drinks, which I thought was very amusing.
I like that Iron Man drinks with Shirley Temple. That's nice.
Mm-hmm.
Very cute.
And of course, Thor drinks mead. And then, this big, enormous event featuring like these dead Celestials basically brings together a group of Marvel superheroes that we now know are going to form the Avengers team. I thought this was a really, really good start. I really enjoyed this, and I think I'm a fan of Ed McGuinness. I think I love his chunky faces and very expressive facial expressions, chunky muscles, all that kind of gear. It's kind of what you want on an Avengers book. I get that he's not a star for everybody, but on a book like this, I think he's very suited.
Superhero team book, definitely. I think you can't get much better.
Definitely, and then I'm with you on the fact that it's like, oh, great, another thing that threatens the Earth as we know it. But there was a lot of nuance in here, the way that they paired off different characters. Not all the team is assembled together yet, so they're all kind of in these little pockets around the world. It's good to see Strange and Black Panther teaming up, and I think that's where I'm going to get a lot of enjoyment out of this series.
Yeah, absolutely. And I love Robbie Ray as Ghost Rider, so I'm excited to see him on the team. I liked the sort of moment of She-Hulk that we got. I'm super on board with this, just concept-wise and the creative team that we have. I think I just wanted it to be a little bit, like, more self-contained, but who cares what I want? This is what we got, and it's pretty good. And I think it'll be, like, good long run.
This feels fairly self-contained, though. I don't think it's going to spill out into other books, do you?
Oh, no, I guess I just meant, like, smaller. Smaller
right,
scale.
Okay, sure. Sure. I get you on that. Did you read the Avengers Free Comic Book Day issue?
No, it went completely. This is what I mean about it not being my Christmas.
Oh, right. You didn't even get a little present. No. Well, that told a story basically of between Odin and Loki. Odin pretty much tells Black Panther, you have to do what I've never been able to and kill Loki. And so that's going to be a little thing tying into this. There was also an amazing little backup in the Free Comic Book Day issue of Ta-Nehisi Coates and Lionel Yu's Captain America run.
That's what I was really excited about.
Looks like it's going to feature lots of clones of Nuke, like the guy with the American flag on his face.
I'm into it.
Yep, it was really, really sick. Very good Free Comic Book Day issue, actually, from Marvel this year. I also, not as good, but the Spider-Man issue from Nick Spencer and Ryan Ottley. Unfortunately, Nick Spencer's... Actually, I enjoyed Nick Spencer's writing on that, but he didn't give enough opportunities for Ryan Ottley to draw crazy shit, which is what Ryan Ottley is great at. Boomerang is going to be a roommate of Peter Parker now, and that's fun.
Yeah,
Siobhan
that's
doesn't
great.
Think so. I should wish I screenshotted that face you just made. I thought Avengers was a ton of fun, and
it's Jason definitely
Aaron has,
going to be great.
Yeah, cool. Also coming out through Marvel this week was the first of the many, some would say unnecessary, Hunt for Wolverine spin-offs. This one's called Weapon Lost. It's written by Charles Soule with art by Matteo Bufagni, another one of my favorite names to say on this show. Colors by Jim Charalampidis. You know what, I think if I was taught how to say that, that could be up there with my favorite names to say, but I hate stumbling over names. There's such a confidence that comes with saying a name like Bufagni.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I was not looking forward to this series. This is the one in which Kitty Pryde has asked Daredevil to help try and find the body of Wolverine.
Because there's no better detective than a lawyer.
Yeah, real weird. But in this issue, he enlists the help of two characters, one of whom Charles Soule has lots of experience writing very well, and that's Frank McGee from The Inhumans, and Misty Knight. And I actually really liked that trio, and I'm kind of psyched about this series now.
Yeah, this was really fun. I enjoyed this way more than I expected, but it was super enjoyable. I like this weird team. I even saw that he did a really good job of introducing the characters to people who may not have heard of them in a fairly seamless, non-annoying way.
Totally, specifically Frank McGee. Yeah. He even though I've read Frank McGee in stacks of comics, I have no idea what his power set is, and so now it's good to finally know what it is.
Yeah, totally. Glowy eyes. Who knew?
Yeah. But not much is done outside of introducing this team to each other. But I think that's fine. It was really enjoyable and a good, an unnecessary tie-in event done well, I think.
Absolutely.
At least you got to learn more about these characters and makes sense to see them having fun together as a team.
Agreed.
The final... there's still a bunch of my Marvel books, actually, that they put out with number ones on them. Did you read You Are Deadpool, number one?
You know what? I just opened it before we started recording, so I didn't read it, but it looked like fun.
So this is a pretty high... Yeah, a high concept choose your own... It's not just a choose your own adventure book, as I'll explain in a moment. This is written by Al Ewing, with colors by Guru FX and art by Salva Espin. This is, choose your own adventure book that also requires you make a dice. So this should appeal to you and me a lot, considering we roll a die every single episode of our podcast. But it actually, there's the page in which Deadpool meets his doom is the flip of the page that you're meant to cut out to make the dice. So he has this big cutout in the middle of his body, provided you've actually, mutilated your comic like you're meant to.
That's funny.
And it fully addresses the fact that no one will actually do that. but yeah, I thought this was really, really fun.
Cool. It seems like a really great concept. I just knew it was going to take me 40 minutes to read, as all choose your own adventure things do.
Yeah, if you play this properly with a dice, I imagine it would be a lot of fun, but ain't nobody got time for that.
No way.
But this is going to be a weekly comic for the next 4 weeks, I think. I've tried to read it and read every different option and kind of follow it along like that, but I think if you were playing by the rules, it would be a lot more fun than if you were just reading it as a comic.
Right, yeah.
Al Ewing, it's fun seeing him take on Deadpool.
Mm-hmm.
And Siobhan, could you please put the other ear of your headphones in your head, because I can hear myself repeating into the microphone.
There you go. Is that better?
Thank you so much. So now we have two little... These don't really count, but they do count, I guess. Two little collections that Marvel released this week. I'm sure you didn't read either of them because they were both significantly big. We got one in the... basically, Marvel have re-released the four issues of Jonathan Hickman's and Dustin Weaver's S.H.I.E.L.D. The Rebirth miniseries, many years ago they released four issues of and then just stopped. And even though Dustin Weaver was started to do art on it, Hickman never finished the scripts. They were going to do the whole thing Marvel style, and basically took them more than 5 years to finish it. So those final two issues are being released as a maxi issue in about 2 weeks' time. And so in the lead up to that, Marvel have released all four of the issues that have already come out as one pretty handy one-shot. It's nice and thick, four issues long, and it's only $5.99 US, which
is...
It's
a good deal. It's a great comic.
Pretty good deal. It's a great comic, although I will say that you don't really get the full story if you only pick this one up, because there was a six-issue S.H.I.E.L.D. miniseries that came out before this by Hickman and Weaver, which you definitely need to read to enjoy this to its fullest. So, heed my warning, listeners.
I still don't believe that we're going to get the finished product.
it's been syndicated or whatever it is. What's it called? What do people look at them all the time? We don't, because we're unprofessional.
Yeah, that thing.
It's Constellations. It's in the stars.
It's Solicited.
And that's where all the comics appear.
The Solicitations.
Solicitations.
There you go.
Thank you so much.
We got there.
The final collection that Marvel put out this week was a Star Wars book entitled Tag and Bink Were Here.
Oh, yeah.
Which is a re-release of four issues, a comedy book that was put out during Dark Horse. And in fact, they haven't altered all the references to Dark Horse within this.
Oh, interesting.
So it begins with, it's a period of great strife and turmoil at Dark Horse Comics, with episode 2 still months ago, editors struggle to meet the demand for new Star Wars comics brought on by a ravenous and unforgiving fan base. So basically, writer Kevin Rubio and pencilers Lucas Marignon with Rick Zombo, inkers Howard M. Shum, Lucas Marignon and Randy Emberlin, with colors by Michelle Madsen, Dan Jackson and Dan Brown. Basically, years ago, they did these... almost like a Rosencrantz and Guildenstern, a dead kind of book, where basically two, like, you know, unwitting buffoons in were kind of around during all the eventful moments of the first three Star Wars movies. And it's, I was like, I don't think I really need to read this, but I started it and I breezed through it. It was so much fun. It hasn't dated too much until the final issue when Silent Jay and Bob. Jay and Silent Bob suddenly show up.
I was
not into that, but before that, it was really, really fun. They have it's like lots of great jokes about Lando being a womanizer and Boba Fett being useless, and it was just kind of fun reading a Star Wars book that didn't take itself seriously at all. It was really, really goofy and silly.
Totally,
I had a lot of fun with it.
I've never read the series, but like I know of it just because it has like a really strong fan base among people who like Star Wars comics, and so I knew of its existence and kind of knew I didn't really have to read it, but it's nice to hear that it still holds up.
And rumor is that Tag and Bink are going to be in the Solo movie, which suggests why they're releasing this now. It has the Legends banner on the front of it, which is what all Star Wars tales that are not considered canon go under the banner of now. So hopefully we get more kind of cool collections of some of the older Star Wars books, especially in this format. It's like still like a regular comic, even though it's, you know, well over 100 pages. And it was $7.99 with a nice thick, which you'd never see on a Marvel book, a nice thick cardboard cover. I highly recommend this if you're a fan of Star Wars. Tag and Bink Were Here. Really, really funny and a great value from Marvel.
Amazing.
But DC also put out a large number of books this week. And they put out the cheapest book this week, provided you don't include all the free comics that we get for Free Comic Book Day. Although, is this kind of just them trying to make a little bit of money out of Free Comic Book Day? Because like this should have been a free Comic Book Day comic.
Yeah,
but instead they made it 25
superhero
cents.
Girls book, which they put out, which is a really bizarre choice.
Yeah, very strange. So DC Nation number 0 came out this week. Three all new stories for only 25 cents. DC, I'm going to have to dock you 100 points because this should have been free. But what was inside it, I mostly liked, and it's going to be the second of two times that I get to laugh as I force Siobhan to describe a Tom King Batman comic to me. So go.
So this is his story. You know what? I like Tom King's Joker because Tom King's Joker is at least funny.
Sure.
So this short story is the Joker waiting for his invitation to Batman and Catwoman's wedding. So of course he's going to be invited. How can he not be invited? He's the love of Batman's life. And so he chooses a random man's house at a random time and chooses to wait there for the invitation. And I thought that was like a funny concept. I thought that was like a cool Joker story. I liked that. This was probably my favorite of the three stories.
Yeah, and that poor motherfucker just waiting for Joker to kill him, like pleading for his life.
Yeah.
And then, you know, an invitation shows up, but it's, yeah, of course he did. Yeah, it was nice and dark. You know,
yeah.
Joker is a horrible person. So if it didn't end like this, it would feel weird.
The second the guy was like, my daughter.
Yeah, and I really enjoyed the Clayman art on it too.
Absolutely.
He draws a great, menacing, but still stylish and suave Joker.
Mm-hmm.
Then we had another peek into what's to come from Bendis's Man of Steel comic.
Mm-hmm.
Which
I liked his Perry White.
I couldn't work out if it was set in the past. Is it set in the past?
I don't think so. I think he's just going for a Silver Age vibe. I don't think it's set in the past.
Right. Kibi's turn your volume down a little bit. I can hear myself again.
Is that better?
I'm also worried about your ears.
Yeah.
Yeah. Can you still hear me though? Yeah.
Yeah.
Everybody, let Siobhan know on Twitter at SiobhanCBG if you're worried about her ears.
I am kind of worried about my ears. My hearing's quite bad.
Oh no. I wasn't super keen on this story. I was actually looking forward to seeing more of the Daily Planet, but just I couldn't gauge if this was set in the past or if Bendis is going to try and make Lois and Clark's relationship rocky, which is not what I want from a Superman book. I don't know. What do you think?
I don't want their relationship to be rocky, but I think something is slightly missing from the Superman books that you kind of only get from the Lois and Clark slightly combative relationship. So I'm okay with making spashing things up a little bit, and I like how I like the newsroom being kind of front and center in Superman stories. I like that whole team, that whole family. I thought it was cool.
Okay, that's good. I'm happy for just like they just make it so Lois calls Clark Smallville again.
That's great.
That's enough for me. I wasn't super keen on the art by Jose Luis Garcia Lopez and Dexter Vines. It looks like a real step back to like boring DC house style.
It's very Silver Age Superman.
Yeah, and we got the Clayman art and then the Jorge Jimenez art on the Justice League prelude that we end this Zero issue with. It just stood out like a sore thumb as just like not being up to scratch or interesting.
Just dated and poorly coloured.
So the final story is the Justice League in No Justice Prelude, which is written by Scott Snyder, James Tynion IV, and Joshua Williamson, who we know from recently doing Dark Knight's Metal, Detective Comics, and The Flash. I think those three have done most recently. Jorge Jimenez on art with Alejandro Sanchez on colors. This is kind of showing us all these different Justice League teams. There are four of them now, all like throughout different parts of space and time, fighting, you know, some world-ending threat, a la the Avengers did this week as well. When you assemble a team, they got to fight something big and mysterious and magic, I guess. But I wasn't sure about what to expect from this run, but if it's like this, I'm super on board. This is fun.
Yeah. I didn't heaps like it. I hate the stupid names that the teams have. I hate that they're called like Team Mystery and Team Entropy. I think that sounds lame.
I like it because it's like the scouts named them. Or like the Girl Guides.
That's
Team
fair.
Wonder, Team Wisdom.
Look, I quite like all of the team setups, so I'm interested to see where it goes. But this didn't super blow me away.
I'm really curious about how they break up each team. Are we going to be flitting between all the teams in each issue, or will they get their own series, or what's the
deal?
All
four teams have their own series, right?
Oh, you really? Whoa, that's,
I think so.
That's ambitious. Wow. Well, look, I thought this was fun, especially after I found Dark Knight's Metal completely not fun. This was a nice breath of fresh air.
It was much more fun.
Yeah. So also from DC this week, because they haven't put out an Action Comics special in months. No special issues of Action Comics in a long, long time. So we got Action Comics special number one. I don't know why this exists.
I think it was much better than Action Comics 1000. I think that these stories
agree.
Better stories, more sophisticated, better illustrated, and did more like to sort of say something about the inherent character of Superman than anything in Action Comics 1000.
And not just the character of Superman, we also got more of Lex Luthor in this issue, who is a very important part of Action Comics. So
yes.
This felt like a much better celebration of Action Comics than 1000 did. We have writers Dan Jurgens, Mark Russell from Flintstones and Snugglepuss, and Max Landis, who gave us the Superman American Alien series a while ago. Plus, he's a dickhead.
I wish I didn't like that comic so much.
Yeah. Well, if it's any consolation, I fucking hated his comic in this issue. We'll get to that in a moment. I'm just trying to find the art credits. Will Conrad drew the Dan Jurgens story. And then doing very comedic art in the Mark Russell story. We had art by Jill Thompson.
Hell yeah.
Colors by Romulo Fiato Jr. Great team. And then on Max Landis's story that I can't wait to complain about so soon. we had amazing art by Francis Manapul. Just incredible art on a piece of shit story. So we'll get to that in a moment. Dan Juergens did a story that I thought was really, really cool and strong about Lex Luthor from the future coming back to the past just to destroy Superman because he fucking hates Superman. How fun is a story in which Lex Luthor wants to kill Superman? It's classic.
It's my perfect Superman story. Lex Luthor just being like, I fucking hate you. I'm going to eat this moon pie. Yeah. It was great.
Yep. So that was enjoyable. And of course, present day Lex Luthor helps Superman kill himself, which irony alert. And then Superman doesn't tell him who he was. I thought that was a really fun story. And it was good to see because Dan Juergens has done some great issues of Action Comics. And I feel like it's dipped in quality in the last few issues, but this felt like as good as it's been in the past.
Absolutely.
So that story was called The Last Will and Testament of Lex Luthor. And I really enjoyed, like, you know, this is like DC House style done well. It made sense for Will Conrad's art to look the way it did in this issue.
Absolutely. And Mark Russell...
Just enough stylized as well. Yep.
Talk to me about this one. I loved. And I especially loved... I would quite like to see a ultra-political Mark Russell Lois Lane book. Because his voice for her at the sort of White House correspondence dinner style thing was great and really funny.
Yeah, I think he went way too schmaltzy when Superman got up or Clark Kent started getting up and doing a roast of Lex Luthor. But it kind of fit. You know, you just imagine it was a Superman of a bygone era doing a roast.
Exactly.
But this short story ended. It was called Suprema Established Suprema Est Lex. I'm sure that is Latin for something important. But this ended with Lex calling his assistant and saying, "I'm running for president." So please give us a Mark Russell book. You know, he gave us Prez in the past. Let us get him to do President Lex Luthor again. That'll be so awesome.
Yeah. I'd be really into it. That's a story that I don't mind them repeating again and again and again. I'm into it.
Totally. He should be president at least once in every DC timeline.
Yeah.
At least.
Absolutely.
So the final story was probably the best looking story in this issue. It was called Driver's Seat, Superman and Lois Lane in Driver's Seat, written by Max Landis with art by Francis Manapul. It's a story in which after like stopping someone from robbing a bank with a jetpack, Superman hears a car crash and realizes it was Lois whose car got crashed into, and it's the car that she learned to drive in, and she's devastated. So then suddenly it's Christmas. So I don't know why this is coming out in fucking May. Clark, instead of like being like, "Hey, Merry Christmas," he's just left a post-it note on Lois's bedside table saying, "The roof, Santa." So, you know, I don't know how easy it is for you to climb on your roof, Siobhan, but that's a task. Anyway, Lois seems to have no trouble and is suddenly up on the roof. And up there is Superman wearing a Santa hat and his Superman suit. And we didn't actually see the inside of Lois's car.
Yeah, I know.
But he's got the seat from Lois's car, which has just been crashed and written off, and the steering wheel, which he's put a bow on. And so he's resting on top of that on a roof, and he goes, "Merry Christmas, Lois." And then this is how I read her next line: "Why are you like this?" Because that is not a good Christmas present.
That's a sweet
final
Christmas
panel,
present.
It's the worst.
That's nice. She loved the car.
She loved the car, and so then the fucking last panel is Superman holding the car seat with Lois sitting in it, holding the fucking wheel where it would be. Like, you know what he should have done? Bought her a new car. That's way nicer.
No also, way. Like, you don't understand romance at all. I feel sorry for your wife.
I'm sorry, nice Bianca. I've never given you your old car seat. In fact, I help you sell both cars.
I see this as like a natural sequel to Max Landis's American Alien run, in which we did get a slightly goofier, slightly schmaltzier, slightly like embarrassingly sensitive Superman, which is kind of what I think Max Landis is probably like. a little bit too emotional, right. And you're like, fucking chill out a minute, mate. But I thought there were a couple of moments in this which I think he understands the character in some kind of fundamental way. Like, I really liked the way that he stopped the bank robber. I thought that was sweet. And I thought that was, like, thoughtful.
Yeah, totally. A great understanding of what Superman would do. Absolutely.
Exactly.
But I'm just like, hashtag justice for Lois Lane at Christmas this year.
Look, she the last panel of present. Her sitting in the seat holding out the wheel in front of her, wearing a helmet while he flies her around, was awful. That was a bad moment.
She's flown with him in way more comfortable positions than this before. I would just be like, okay, we can get rid of the seat. You can just carry me.
Also, she's got a seatbelt on. What is the seatbelt attached to? The seatbelt isn't, like, attached to the seat.
Anyway. I don't know. Hey, turn to the... This is my conspiracy for this week. Turn to the inside cover of this DC comic, or indeed any DC comic this week. So the inside cover, like page 2.
Yeah. Oh, hey. So, yes, that's a right? good point.
So every DC comic this week had an ad for DX Racer, which are these, I guess, gamer chairs. And you get 15% off. You get 15% off if you use the code DC Comics. And so I think that Max Landis was just asked to do a comic in which a chair looks cool.
Yeah, I bet you he has chairs for DX Racer. In DX Racer or some shit.
That's my conspiracy. Please at me on Twitter, at LevDog, if you agree. I assume everyone does. Final DC book for this week was Harley Quinn in Harley Loves Joker, written by Paul Dini with art by Brett Blevins. I am totally happy at this point in my life to just accept that I don't care about Harley Quinn as a character anymore. And I like, even if it is the creator, Paul Dini, writing her, I just don't care. And I'm not going to read it.
Even when you drew it, Blevins.
Andrew Blevins. Did you read this?
You know what? I did.
And?
I think Paul Dini is one of the only people who has a good voice for that relationship.
Sure.
I think in a lot of other people's hands, it becomes really horrible and toxic, and having it be really active on Harley's part, I think makes it work a little bit better. But this is quite boring to me. It's not really, like, doing anything new or interesting. It's a bit of good fun. If you really love Harley Quinn and you really miss this version of the character, go for it. But probably
I love Tom Taylor's take on Harley Quinn in Injustice. Mm-hmm. I just want that version now forever.
Yeah, I had like a really long conversation with Tom where he was like, why aren't you reading Injustice? And I was like, I don't know.
That's amazing. The call
like,
out.
He was like, it's really good. You'd really like it. And I was like, I know. I keep thinking that.
And this is after talking to you for like 15 minutes and he'd worked out that you would really like it.
Yeah.
That's amazing. How great. So that's the big twos, number ones, out of the way. Now we move over to Image. They had a number one this week written by one of their star writers, Rick Remender, featuring art by Bengal. What has she done in the past?
I don't Bengal? Know.
Is Bengal? She a tiger? Bengal? Bengal tiger?
Kind of tiger.
Maybe she is. But this book was called Death or Glory. I assume she's European because it was very Euro art, right?
It's very Euro. It's very gorgeous. Loved this.
This is a story about a woman whose husband is dying, and in order to get him a new kidney, she is going to rob people that she knows, like, and basically get the money that she needs to.
Also, it's not her husband; it's her like surrogate father.
Oh, whatever. It's a male figure.
Yeah.
I blame that on Rick Remender. because I was too focused on a killer that's also in this book who kills people with a liquid nitrogen gun.
Yeah.
How are you supposed to work out male-female relationships with a nitrogen gun in play?
And some hilarious boob panels. I just opened one, I got really distracted.
Drawn by a girl. Drawn by a girl, it's fine.
Absolutely. Drawn by a boy, it's fine. I like
it. You like the boob panels. So Death of Glory, I don't want to give too much away about the plot because I feel like a lot is revealed in this first issue that's going to kind of dictate how the rest of the series is going to go. I didn't think I would like it for the first half, and then suddenly I really liked it as the second half continued.
Same.
And I'm going to enjoy reading the next issue too.
Absolutely. Same. really, really beautiful, really gorgeous, like dynamic, full of movement, good fun.
Stacks of action.
I loved it.
Yep. Real good fun. Death or Glory, mm-hmm. go check it out from Image today. But the book I'm very
also,
excited
Bengal
to talk about.
Bengal is a boy.
Bengal is a boy.
Bengal is a boy.
There you go. There you go. Make that the episode title. What do you reckon? Bengal is a boy?
Perfect.
Maybe not. Who knows? the issue I want to talk about this week is Coda, issue
yes,
number
please.
One. Came out through Boom Studios, written by on again, off again, serious issues favorite, Simon Spurrier, with art by a definite European artist, Mateus
yes.
Bergara. This was a double issue, big, thick 60-ish pages, 40-ish pages. Mm-hmm. And it's high fantasy, which if you are a regular listener to the show, know that that's fucking ringing the alarm bells in my head.
Mm-hmm.
Because I just my back arches up as soon as I see runes and goblins and shit. But this was so much fun. And it was Spurrier kind of dialing back on all of the things that I've disliked about his similar kind of fantasy books lately. The world. It's grounded. There's kind of like a narrative, a narration technique mm-hmm. where you have the main character writing a letter to his partner that's been imprisoned by evil people, and I thought that was a really great way of anchoring and kind of explaining the main character and give you a connection to the main character instead of throwing you into this like insane world where you're just kind of scrambling trying to figure out what's going on, which is how mm-hmm. I feel sometimes reading his number one issues. But this is about a man and his unicorn, and it's not actually a unicorn, it's a
pentacorn
or something. Pentacorn. He has five horns, and basically it's like a big fantasy epic full of double crossing and you know, better the devil you know kind of mentality relationships.
It's like a post-apocalyptic fantasy book. They used to live in like crystal spires, and now everyone's on the ground and they're using elf blood for magic. And I loved this. I think the art is so stunning. The colors, who I think someone else did, the color assists are by Michael Doig.
And
this is such a like sort of like really kind of acidy pastels or something, but it's beautiful. Really, really lovely. I loved this
so much. And there's a map in the back.
I love maps.
Everybody, you get a bonus point for including a map at the back.
I love a good...
This was an excellent first issue.
Absolutely. Really conflicted hero with, like, some really solid heartbreak going on. I love it.
Yep.
This was excellent.
You're not sure who to root for the entire way you're reading through it.
No.
But it's not like you're just watching panel after panel of, like, characters you don't like. You kind of like parts of all of them. Yeah, great character work.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what makes this just, like, work, really, is that the characters, first and foremost, are relatable in their own ways in this big crazy world, instead of having completely unrelatable characters in a crazy unrelatable world. There is a lot of heart to this book, and I really
Absolutely.
Enjoyed it. Highly recommend this.
At his best.
Definitely. Coda number one through Boom Comics. Definitely check this one out. $3.99 gets you a big double issue with an excellent good quality hard cardboard cover. Real dope.
Nice package.
From Valiant this week, Valiant gave us Harbinger Wars. I don't know.
Who knows?
It's not someone's last name. I don't really care too much. Harbinger Wars. Number two. This is a prelude written by Eric Hisera with Raul Allen and Patricia Martin. This was the team that gave us the great Valiant series Secret Weapons last year.
Mm-hmm.
And this issue, the prelude at least, is a semi-sequel, I guess, to mm-hmm. Secret Weapons, in which we catch up with all of the young heroes from that book and their leader, Livewire. Basically, like, Livewire is kind of tricked by the government into meeting with them while the government tracks down the young heroes with the intention of killing them. And so, again, we see them have to use their powers to escape, but they've leveled up significantly since we last saw them, and it was cool seeing them work really well as a team.
Absolutely.
So I was like, hell yeah, I'm super on board for this now, but I don't think that the entire event is going to be like this. It looks like it's going to include all of the Valiant universe and be drawn by someone besides Raul Allen. Because Raul Allen, like, he's so... What's that, sorry?
I was just going to say, Eric Heister is writing the whole thing, right?
With Matt Kent.
Oh, which is okay. Good. Yeah, cool.
Yeah, but I really, really want more of this. I just want another series of Secret Weapons. And it feels like this sets up enough for it to be its own contained thing. But it looks like it's going to bring in everyone else from the Valiant universe, which I'm sure Valiant fans are very excited about. But Secret Weapons was very special. And I don't know how much more Eric Heisserer is doing for Valiant. So it'd be a shame if it was just this one little semi-sequel to Secret Weapons, because that was a great miniseries.
I assume that they're doing another Secret Weapons series. I think they are. But I think that this was really great. I think this is like a really great setup to an event. I think that the way that they are going to bring in the rest of the Valiant universe is really clever. I don't know, I'm into
definitely.
It.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
I think this was a great prelude.
Sorry to focus on the tiny amount of negative that isn't even present really in the issue. It was a brilliant issue with great
really
art.
Really great issue.
Roald Allen's layouts are so awesome and dynamic and inventive.
The colours.
And the action is just so much fun. Really enjoyed this.
Yeah.
Final number one issue I read this week. I'm assuming you didn't read The Nightmare Before Christmas, Zero's Journey.
Correct.
Came out through Tokyo Pop. This is an all-ages manga adaptation of like a kind of side journey based off of Tim Burton's The Nightmare Before Christmas. Written by DJ Milky with Ishiyama, Arai, Connor, and Hutchison. And it's kind of about, it's about Jack Skellington's dog Zero, that ghost dog with the pumpkin on his nose, getting lost and finding himself in Christmas Town. And then they start telling him tales. This was like really, really simple. I was going to say dull, but I'll go with simple. I just don't think it did enough to justify a $3.99 cover price. This felt like it should have been a free comic book day issue as well. I can't really recommend that one unless you are an absolute diehard fan of Nightmare Before Christmas and desperate for new content. So those are all the number one issues this week. I think Siobhan agrees with me in saying that Coda is probably our pick of that. As far as series you should pick up?
Yeah. Yep, yeah. Agreed.
So
definitely pick up Coda.
Definitely, when you get your comics this week, try and make sure you check to see if your store still has copies of Coda in stock. And I assume you're already reading Avengers already. It'll get real good, I swear. So normally we would play roll the three-sided die for DC, Marvel, or Image, but I don't have a die, neither does Siobhan. We left it at the store. So I'm just going to pick... we're going to review depending on who put out the most books this week, and DC put out 5. So we're going to do DC first. I got 5 DC books ahead of me. To be honest, I just chose DC because I can't wait for to hear Siobhan's objective description of this first and foremost before she gives her opinions of Batman issue number 46, written by Tom King with art by Tony Daniel.
Okay. So in the last issue, Booster Gold was like, I am going to do a really nice wedding present for Batman and Catwoman. I'm going to make it so that Batman's dad never died, because as a superhero who exists mostly in the time stream, I think that will have no negative effects at all. And obviously, the world that we awoke in was fairly, like, post-apocalyptic. Batman uses guns. It's Dick Grayson. Bruce is, like, some pampered daddy's boy who doesn't want the world to change. And apparently, Catwoman is totally fucking crazy and thinks she's a real cat and is, like, a serial murderer. So that's cool. And we...
That was really cool.
This issue is 1 year later from when we left off. And everything is falling to pieces, and Booster Gold thinks that the way to fix that is to rescue Catwoman from Arkham, and once Bruce sees her, his true love will snap him out of it, and he'll want the world to go back to the way it is. Things don't go that way, friends.
No. I think I enjoy this as an Elseworlds tale. I think it's problematic when you... If this is the same Booster Gold in regular continuity, because this Booster Gold is a fucking idiot. Like,
this Booster Gold instead is a of like big dummy.
Yeah, normally he's like a lovable buffoon with a heart of gold who does the wrong thing before he does the right thing. This is just like a stupid decision beyond anything he's ever done before. Like, which, if you just want a good story out of it, I'll forgive it, whatever. I think this story is like a lot of fun, especially featuring like a savage Catwoman. And the final panel, which mirrors that, you know, the classic panel of Bruce Wayne with his dead parents at the side of him, except it's an adult Bruce Wayne with his dead older parents with him. I thought that was, I know this is the wrong word, pretty funny.
Yeah, I was going to say, having a lot of fun with this, like, extremely grim, like, quite violent issue.
So I think that is why we enjoy Tom King differently.
Yeah.
Because when he goes full on morbid, I roll my eyes and laugh.
Yeah.
And you roll your eyes.
I just roll my eyes.
What did you think of this issue? Did you enjoy it more than the last one, or is this just not an Elseworlds you're enjoying?
Look, I definitely didn't hate it. I quite like an Elseworlds thing where you're like, ooh, I wonder what this guy's up to. I wonder what this guy's up to. And I even quite like Tony Daniels' art in this issue. He draws a great Catwoman.
Amazing Catwoman, yeah.
And I thought it was funny, the idea of, like, Booster being responsible for the Michelle Pfeiffer era cat suit, because he sewed it. And, yeah, this is, like, it's not for me, but it's not the worst shit ever. It's all right.
Yeah. Look, it's a very, very polarizing run. More and more people in our community, in our Facebook group, that is, facebook.com/groups/serious issues podcast, expressing their distaste to especially this arc during the run. But I'm enjoying it more and more. I love how stupid and crazy it gets.
Yeah. I just feel like it massively furthers my Tom King isn't great at writing women, that he like just takes Catwoman's voice away from her completely in this, and she just meows like a cat.
You know, like women do.
Exactly.
Meow is one of the few words that my 1-year-old daughter can say. So.
Oh, really? I thought she liked bunnies.
Maybe he consulted with her. Oh, no, she she loves doing animal noises. And you say, Tilly, what does a cat say? And she says, meow. Oh,
so cute.
I highly recommend teaching Shatterstar every animal that says rah, because hearing... like 10 animals in a row with different iterations of the sound rah is very entertaining. You got tiger, you've got bear, you've got lion, you've got dinosaur.
Does she have different ones for each?
Yeah, it's like she starts really boisterous, like rah, and then gradually it becomes rah, rah. I'll record it sometime.
So cute.
So we also got from DC this week issue 31 of Deathstroke, continuing the Deathstroke versus Batman arc, written by Christopher Priest, with art on this one by a fun name that I'm about to say as soon as I see it written in full wherever it is in this issue.
Carlo Pagulian and Roberto Villacara. And Larry Hammer on breakdowns, and Jason Paz on inks, and Jeremy Cox on colors. It's a big team.
Huge. You would think that would lead to very, up and down art, but it's really consistent the whole way through.
It is.
This is a super fun story.
DC house style almost.
Definitely. This is a super fun story in which Batman tells Deathstroke, enough's enough. The Deathstroke project's over. I'm putting an end to it. And it's all being orchestrated by Alfred and Wintergreen, who is Deathstroke's Alfred figure, I guess. And you have kind of like talking at the camera narration from A. Robin, who I guess we assume is Tim or someone. I don't even know. Maybe
I
Jason.
I assume it's Jason. Right. Because of the level of sass.
Deathstroke's son, too. But the thing is, everyone is sassy in a Christopher Priest comic, so...
Yeah, I was just thinking, like, this has probably a similar level of, like, violence and, like, oh, it's fucked up shit to a Tom King book, but I just like Christopher Priest's voice more, so I just really enjoy what he does, and I find it funny and silly as opposed to, like, personally offensive.
And this entire arc is kind of about who is actually Damian Wayne's father, because both Batman and Talia al Ghul are saying that it's Deathstroke's.
And Deathstroke's like, I don't care. I don't want him. Exactly. Keep him.
So the next issue of this is called The Seven Waynes. I don't know what that relates to, but that's exciting.
I love a lot of fun, this run.
Yeah, if you ever see this like in a sale or whatever, like you owe it to yourself to read all of Christopher Priest's Deathstroke run. It's so much fun.
Justice League run.
Yeah, definitely. Keep Priest at DC doing good stuff.
Yes, please.
He really just kills it with his character. It's a lot of fun. We mentioned it earlier, but Injustice 2, issue number 25 came out. This collects the digital issues. This is issue 25, written by Tom Taylor, with art by Daniel Semper and inks by Juan Albarrán. It's super fun, like, you know, alternate version of the DC Universe at the moment. Ra's al Ghul has created his own version of Amazo, who's, like, wiped out most of Delhi. The few heroes that are able to take him down basically have taken him out of action, all thanks to a Supergirl that Batman doesn't know exists. This one saw the deaths of a few other DC heroes. Damian has a brother. Like, there's another... It's all about, like, Damian choosing between Ra's al Ghul or Batman, and it looks like he's going back to Batman in this issue. But his sister sure as hell isn't.
Who's sister?
It's super fun. Damian has a sister in this.
Oh.
Who's like a... Yeah. Yeah.
Cool.
So I guess she's, like, Talia's daughter from someone else, I guess. I don't know. Great. But Black Adam's really great in this. Like, everything you... Like, oh, there's an amazing moment between... Jamie, Blue Beetle, and Supergirl on the moon. As writer Tom Taylor told you on Saturday, why aren't you reading this, Siobhan? You would love it.
I know, I'm an idiot. I got to get on it.
It's a lot of fun. If you're a DC fan, it's extremely rewarding. Yeah, and I feel like you could just pick up the next issue and like I'll tell you all the things that you don't understand. But it's just so much fun just to see all these characters that you don't really see interacting in the regular continuity interacting. It's great.
Cool.
Have you got any other regular DC books, or can we move to Young Animal?
Young Animal.
Young Animal time. All right, so we got issue number 3 of Shade the Changing Woman by Cecil Castellucci, Marley Zarconi, Andy Parks, and Kelly Fitzpatrick this week, featuring an incredible cover. They always do have incredible covers by Becky Cloonan. And in this one, Shade is kind of getting rid of her humanity at a time that her human friends actually need her. Which is not good for them. And meanwhile, the girl whose body she used to inhabit is now inhabiting like a kind of androgynous young man, and is kind of like fucking and killing her way through all of her past friends and enemies.
It's
fucking
great.
This is the it's best. So good. I was not expecting like this to be the direction that the series would take. But oh boy, am I on board with it. It's so much fun and like really grisly, but Marley Zarconi's art is so beautiful and pretty and pop arty that doesn't really have this, like, it is slightly disturbing, but in a really beautiful way.
Absolutely. It's like the kind of violence that I like in comics. I think this is so great, and I think they've developed such amazing characters and the little backup as well, which is kind of set in the same, with the same characters in the same universe but in a potential future, is like so clever and so great, and it's such a brilliant book. It's definitely the best of the Young Animal ones, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we said as much last year. But the, I just love the way that it kind of deconstructs madness and what would drive someone to madness and what makes a person mad while still being like a very out of this world kind of cosmic weird comic.
Absolutely.
Highly recommend it.
Highly recommend it.
This run is like as good as the last one, if not better, I think. I think it's going to get to a really, really exciting point.
For sure.
I've also very much enjoyed this next comic, Exit Stage Left, The Snagglepuss Chronicles, issue 5 of 6, written by Mark Russell, with art by, I don't know what this guy's name is, but I'll find it, Mike Feehan, with inks by Sean Parsons and Jose Marzan Jr., with colors by Paul Mounts. This is the second last issue of this very great mini-series, which is kind of like this... it's set during a time of, in America's past, in the 50s, where people were very afraid of the red menace and terrified of communism and terrified of people living differently to the norm. And so Snagglepuss in this world is a gay playwright who the government is demanding take a stand and kind of basically confess and dob in a bunch of his differently living friends and people in his society in order to get immunity himself. Something tragic happens to his best friend Huckleberry Hound in this issue, which makes Snagglepuss choose a much more righteous path. And I thought this issue was absolutely brilliant in every single way.
I'm sad I missed it. It sold out before I could get a copy, which is good news.
Oh, you're kidding me. That's great news. Well, I'll make sure that I put your name on a post-it and slap it on this when I return it this week.
Thank you.
Because fucking hell, it was an absolute cracker of an issue. Have we mentioned in the past, though, how much of a bad... Like, it's not even that bad of a comic. It is just the worst backup matter to be paired with this very heavy kind of, like, mirror of society comic that we get from Snagglepuss. There's this backup called Sasquatch Detective... But I'm not going to say the names of the creators because they don't deserve the shit that I'm going to give them right now because it's not their fault. But it's just...
I don't hate it. It's all right.
It's this goofy set now comedy comic about like a big Sasquatch who is like a bit trying to be a detective. And like, no, I don't hate it. I don't hate it. I just think it is such a mismatch to have it, especially in this issue, which ends so heavily. And you're like, oh man, what's going to... Like, what a bummer of an ending. And then it's the adventures of Sasquatch Detective. She's wearing pink sweatpants that say something goofy on them. I don't even know what they say, but they say the juice is loose.
Oh yeah, amazing.
Yeah, I don't know. They are pink though. Snagglepuss is pink, so you can see why someone chose that to be the backup. Anyway, so those are the DC ones. So according to this logic, in which we choose the comic, the people that put out the most Image tied actually with DC this week and put it. I've got 5 of their comics in front of me right now. How many are you?
I
got,
Siobhan? I have 2 Marvel comics and I have 1 Image comic.
Right, okay, well let's do Image first. I assume that one Image comic you have is Sex Criminals.
It sure is.
So we get to play the very, very fun game, but it's over Skype, so hopefully the resolution is good enough for you to describe accurately what you get. At least this is the least subtle one they've done in a while. You'll be able to get what it is straight away. So my favorite segment of this show, we get to do it once a month, is Siobhan describing in vivid detail what the XXX variant of Sex Criminals is each time it comes out. And so this week it's by Elsa Charretier.
Oh, hell yeah.
Who I think is an amazing cartoonist. Here it is for you in the camera.
Oh.
You can describe what it is.
Whoa! It's a vagina, and there's a tiny little... Is that John?
It's John, I guess.
John hanging on to the clitoris, I believe, for dear life. It's gorgeous.
Yep.
That's amazing.
And, look, it's a well-shaped... It needs a bit more shaving, I guess, or it was shaved
it's in that awkward a month or two ago.
Mid-stage, yeah. A brilliant, absolutely brilliant.
Gorgeous. Incredible. I love it.
So good. Yep. So that was us. That's our review of the Sex Criminals cover. Now let's review the issue. Siobhan, I think this is in a much better place than it was a year ago as a series.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you know, I guess that's what happens when things start going the way that you kind of want it to, as opposed to mm-hmm. when they're kind of ending everything that was mm-hmm. like, you know, stable about the series. Of mm-hmm. course, this is written by Matt Fraction and Chip Zdarsky, who does art as well. Yeah, I mean, this is one that a lot of our listeners read in trade, so I don't want to go through any of the finer plot points. But
no, but we get some awesome character development for John and a whole bunch of people. We get, like, more cool mystery stuff for Susie. Like, this was a great issue.
Yeah, 100%. And with incredible backup matter. Do you read all the letters?
Yeah, it's my favorite part. I read them all and laugh at all of them because I love Chip.
Yeah, Chip's real good. Where's the Dask heads? So that was the only Image book you read?
Yeah, that was it.
Well, I read... Okay, I can kind of review them all together because they're all at a point in the series where I don't really want to describe what happened in any of them because I'll give away parts of these. So I read issue number 37 of East of West by Jonathan Hickman, Nick Dragota, and Frank Martin on colors. This is Hickman's maybe best work. It's everything you liked that he's done in Avengers, except on his own terms. It's this, like, post, you know, apocalyptic war kind of thing in which the very embodiments of the four horsemen of the apocalypse are kind of, like, raining havoc on the world, which has been divided up into different territories. And all of those leaders of each territory have been killing each other. It's so great. This issue saw, like, the return of someone that we thought dead, who is now... You know, we're like, 37 issues into this, so you're seeing, like, people allying themselves with other characters that you never thought they would at any point in the series, which is always super fun. Look, I know Tom Taylor didn't say specifically about this comic, but Siobhan, you should be reading this because you would love it. It's Hickman at his most Hickman, and it's fucking great. Black Science, issue number 35 by Rick Remender, Matteo Scalera, and Moreno Denisio. This is, like... It's well, that was loud. What was that?
It was a motorcycle outside my apartment.
Motorbike. Wow, yeah. That's wild.
How cool. That person seems real cool.
it was the Fonz. This is a series that, like, it feels like it could have ended a few issues ago, but they threw a very, very cool device into this issue, in that there are versions. This is, like, a big thing about the multiverse, and so in this, it kind of suggests that there are versions of our characters who do basically, like, the two main characters of this series are doomed to always fuck the world up, and so there is someone employed to trap them somewhere so they can stop fucking up the multiverse. And that's what happens in this. And so it's someone's job, and that someone actually has ties to them. It was a really, really interesting, and, like, just when you think this book could have ended, like, I don't know what they're going to do next, but I can't see this ending anytime soon. Stray Bullets, Sunshine and Roses, issue 34. Lots of books in their 30s this week. This is written and drawn by David Lapham, a horrible, dark crime series that I love dearly. And this was an unbelievable issue in which you see an ex-junkie character who's teamed up with another character. Basically, like, you know, he's always worried about turning back to drugs. And in this one, he lives out this, like, you know, he gets to be the hero, and a hero that meets a grisly end, but then it's suddenly revealed that this was all imagined and he's accidentally gone back on the drugs.
Oh, no.
Which is even more tragic than death itself. But
and also, a way more tragic version of it was all a dream.
Yeah, definitely. But the way it's done is so just, like... just, like, comically dark, the way that David Laffin does it, like no other. This is an excellent issue.
Cool.
Please, more people read this series so I can talk about how great it is with you. Finally, Walking Dead issue 179 was potentially massive for the future of this series, but who knows? I don't know. There's, like, this new community of people. Michonne has put her sword down, Siobhan.
Oh, no.
Yep. So
how's she going to get it back
that's
up?
That's a pretty... I don't know. Viagra. Sword nice. Viagra.
Nice.
Pretty funny. Pretty funny stuff. So those are our Image reviews, and now we move over to Marvel. I actually think you may have read a Marvel book that I didn't. Did you see Black Panther in your stack?
Yeah, I read Rise of the Black Panther.
Oh, yeah, I grabbed one of the series.
Which is the one that is written by Evan Narcisse, but with Consulting by Ta-Nehisi Coates, pencils by Javier Pina and Edgar Salazar, and inks by Javier Pina and Keith Champagne. Good name. Colors
great
by
name.
Stefan Petro. And this is like another, it's just continuing on like the history of T'Challa. So we just saw him open up Wakanda to the rest of the world. He's shown everyone else that Wakanda exists, and now he's having to interact, and he's discovering all these like other children that his dad had. Hilarious. Him meeting Storm, stuff like that. And this is like, it's pretty good fun. It's not as good as the main Black Panther comic, but it's pretty good. I like it quite a lot. I like getting a bit of history.
Is that the final one,
T'Chaka?
Or is there one more?
I think there's one more.
Okay. Did we both read Infinity Countdown this week?
I did. Hang on.
It's what somewhere in Siobhan's house.
Yeah.
So this is written by Jerry Duggan with art by Aaron Kuda, Mike Hawthorne, Terry Pilot, Jordi Belair, Mike Diodato Jr. and Frank Martin. It's an all-star lineup for a pretty big event, cosmic event, which is entirely written by Jerry Duggan. So it's it feels pretty cohesive and fun. In this one, basically they're all trying to assemble the Infinity Stones. This dealt with Ultron having one of them and a big fight between him and Adam Warlock. We have the Guardians featuring Ant-Man trying to protect this enormous version of the Power Stone. They worked out the secret to making it not as big. And the fight culminated in a big, ridiculous saxophone solo by Drax. They win by throwing. It's pretty great. They win by. They think they're about to die. And Drax goes, "Well, I'm gonna die. There's one thing I wish I did more in life, and that's play." So he pulls his saxophone out, and then they throw the Power Stone in it, and then he kills everybody, and saves everybody by playing a Power Stone powered saxophone.
Oh,
and
man.
That is the fucking best thing I saw all week. Aaron Kuda draws the shit out of that, and it was so stupid and fun.
That's fun.
So yeah, great issue.
Great job. Great job.
It ended in Silver Surfer asking Galactus, the Lifebringer, to help him take down Ultron.
Cool. Oh, that's cool.
Pretty fun. Really fun.
Great.
It's a really, really fun series. So I take it the last Marvel book we're going to talk about is Captain America 701?
No.
No.
What?
What did you read?
I read Rogue and Gambit issue 5.
Okay, you can talk about that first.
That was really good. It was just really great. It ended really nicely. It sort of concluded very sweetly. Rogue and Gambit are back together and better than ever. Great. Top marks. Good job, Kelly Thompson. She can write.
Was that the end of the series?
Yeah.
Oh, right, cool. I'll have to pick up and catch up.
It wasn't an amazing issue on its own, but it like tied everything together. Wrapped it up in a neat bow. It was cute. I liked it a lot. Yeah.
Sweet. Issue number 700... Captain America 701, this is, the swan song for Mark Waid before Ta-Nehisi Coates comes over. And it's a crazy story that you would have really enjoyed, I think, with art by Leonardo Romero, who previously did Kelly Thompson's Hawkeye art. Adam Hughes. Let me not sing again. J.G. Jones, Jordi Belair, and Paul Mounce. So a pretty amazing lineup that... And each of those artists drew a different... time period, but the bulk of this issue by Romero is set far into the future in a world that is like the ideals of Steve Rogers and Captain America. For finally, you know, everything's gone to plan and everyone lives in peace and harmony, and everyone is given like a version of the super soldier serum that you know lets them live longer and be stronger, all that kind of thing. But the one person in this world whose body is rejecting the soldier serum is a descendant of Steve Rogers himself. In order to save his son, the boy's father, who is also a descendant of Steve Rogers, obviously, basically tries to uncover the secrets of the serum, and in doing so discovers a bunch of horrible truths about this future that he lives in. And it was so great and high concept and fun. The glimpses back in the past were really, really fun. You have like a very... How Great's America set in World War II, kind of few panels by Adam Hughes. And then this great bit where J.G. Jones draws Steve Rogers going undercover as like a roadie for something for like, yeah, set in like the 60s, where, awesome. And Nick Fury's like getting him to like figure out who this band really is.
Great.
And it uses the glimpses back in time as a device that makes sense within the actual plot set in the future. This is a really, really cool way for Mark Waid to say goodbye to the series, and probably the best thing he's done on the series so far, for my taste anyway.
Cool.
Highly recommend catching up on this one. The final arc is called Promised Land. It's a really, really cool concept and idea.
Is that Mark Waid's final issue?
No, it's ongoing. Okay. I think there's at least four parts of this story before Ta-Nehisi takes over.
Okay.
Maybe cool. a few at least. But I love this. This is really, really cool. So those are our reviews of Marvel, Image, and DC. Last thing we do every episode is review all of the comics that came out through other publishers this week. I got a few of them.
I only have Black Mask.
I'm going to start. Right. Issues. Okay. Well, I've got some Dark Horse books.
Nice.
We got the third issue of Doctor Star and the Kingdom of Lost Tomorrows.
I did read that.
Did you read that?
Yeah.
Damn.
Great.
Written by Jeff Lemire, with art by Max Fiamara, Dave Stewart, and Nate Piekos. What, you did read it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, great.
It was great.
Because this is like a super bummer Lemire story in which Dr. Star, who is like an alternate version of Starman from DC, but in the Black Hammer continuity, he, in the Silver Age of Heroes, he travels into space to help, solve some shit in space, travels too close to a black hole, and when he returns, it's been like decades, and his son is old and doesn't he's given up hope of ever seeing his father again, and he's missed his son growing up. But also, this book began further in the future, in which his son is actually dying of cancer, and mm-hmm. so this has been a quest for Dr. Star to, I guess, help his son in the one way he can by not allowing him to die of cancer. And in this, he discovers that he has more children than he thinks, but not in the way that you think. And this is a great issue of a great series.
Agreed. Very, very good. Good job, Jeff Lemire.
And I hope that Max Fiamara is able to keep drawing like miniseries that tie into Black Hammer, because it's such a perfect fit when he draws Absolutely. All these like all these people in like intergalactic costumes, all these different aliens that kind of almost looks like a Green Lantern core. It's so much fun. Mm-hmm. Great colors by Dave Stewart, of course, too. Other Dark Horse book was also colored by Dave Stewart this week, written by Mike Mignola with art by Dave Stenbeck. Of course, I'm talking about Koshi the Deathless from the pages of Hellboy, telling like kind of like the life story of one-time Hellboy enemy, Koshi the Deathless, as he recounts his life to Hellboy himself in Hell. This book is just a fucking treat, just filled with so much like weird kind of horror lore and just like real great tales and fables, mm-hmm. and the way it's told is so morose but matter of fact,
perfect while still being fairy tales vibes.
Yeah. And we're one issue away from the end, but this has been like, I think, one of the biggest surprises that I've picked up in the last year, I think, just in terms of like not expecting a Hellboy kind of spin-off to be as good, if not better, than most of the Hellboy comics I've read. So
yeah,
it's highly excellent. Recommended to anybody. Yeah, Koshi the Deathless. Even if you haven't read Hellboy, it's just really, really fun. Great lore.
Mm-hmm.
Jazz Maynard, issue number 4 from volume 2, came out this week.
Did you forget to get this one? We sold out of this as well.
Holy shit. All the good comics are selling probably because of our fault. We got the part 2 of Blood, Jazz, and Tears by Roger and Raleigh, in which Jazz Maynard is kind of on assignment in Reykjavik. Trying to take down a bunch of Nazis in there. It also kind of ties back into how he became a super spy criminal, mm-hmm. criminal mastermind extraordinaire. And cool. Then you have his kind of protege trying to like prove himself to him at all times and doing a pretty terrible job of it. The art is brilliant. You don't really see better action layouts in panels than what you get in a Jazz Maynard comic. It's just absolutely tremendous and a real treat to read.
Mm-hmm.
I hope. I think every volume is like 6 issues long, and then you get this gorgeous trade. So I'll lend you this issue. But yeah, the trade's the best. Did you read Long Lost this week?
No, Damn. I've had a rough week, guys.
I know it's been a hell of a week. I'll make sure I put a few of these comics aside so you can catch up with them during the week. Long Lost issue number 6, written by Matthew Ehrman, with art by Lisa Stirl, came out this week through Scout Comics. This has been somewhat of a favorite of ours since it started, from two creators that we've never really read anything by in the past, from a publisher I've never read anything from either. So this is a real surprise. But this is kind of like a slice of life horror book. In which we see the reunion of two estranged sisters whose mother left them while they were kids. And we find out the reason that she left them was because of dark magic and witch reasons.
And
in this, the bulk of this issue is kind of set during their past, when they were children.
Cool.
And then we catch up with them in their current age as they visit their childhood home. There are some proper creepy moments in this book, but... you know, the best thing about it is the dynamic between the two sisters, just very real feeling dialogue, and of course beautiful art by Lisa Stirl. I assume a trade is coming out soon, and we'll definitely let you know when that comes out, because this is absolutely a series that you should be reading. It's called Long 100%. Lost out through Scout Comics. Try and pick it up if you can. So now I've got some Black Mask books. Siobhan, you can do this Black Mask segment.
Excellent. Well, I read issue 2 of Come Into Me. Goodness.
Me too.
I feel horrible saying that. Written by Zach Thompson and Lonnie Nadler. Pencils and inks by Piotr Kowalski. Colors by Nico Guardia. Letters by Ryan Ferrier. And this is a sort of body horror, body swap, life lesson, angel on my shoulder vibe, I think. So in the last issue, we saw this guy coming up with this new technology which allows two people to inhabit the same body at the same time. And we can all learn about each other. And we can learn so much about people. Mm. It'll be like the new social media. You'll just be inside someone else's body. And he allows a woman to come into him. And then she dies in her body. Now she's stuck in his brain.
And
cool.
She finds out in this issue that she's able to take over his body.
Yes.
In parts too.
And she's slowly there is a lot improving I love. His life.
There's a lot I love about this book, and those moments are what I love about it and while I keep reading. But the way they portray this man is like there's a you know, he hates his own body, and he like accidentally lets her see a memory of him talking to a girl on the internet naked.
Yeah,
I thought that was kind of sloppily done. I thought that was kind of clunkily done, but for the most part this series is really cool.
Yeah, absolutely. I really like it. I think it's very clever. I wish that like, Kowalski's covers are so unbelievable. They're really gorgeous. Like, if I hated myself, I would put that on a poster and put it on my wall and just skeeve myself out all day. But it's, like, so beautiful. And I wish he had as much time to spend on the interiors, because I think there's a little bit of, like, it's not quite as detailed, or it's a little bit rushed, or it's not quite as stylized as I would like. But it's such an interesting story, and it's so sophisticatedly done.
Yeah, I think that might be a case of the inks and colors, though, because his art on Sex, which is the book that he did with Joe Casey, was everything you're describing. That's what, like, it's great. Like,
okay.
it's very, very stylized and awesome. And whether this is because of, you know, he's not spending as much time on it, or maybe it's the colors, or actually, no, he's penciled and inked by him, so I don't know. But yeah, you're right. It isn't as good as his work on Sex. I agree.
But I love this. I'm on board with this. For the foreseeable future.
Really
and
cool.
The little essays in the back about sort of body horror and stuff like that are so interesting and so compelling.
The cover for the next one's so weird.
Sorry?
The cover for the next one's so freaky too.
It's a really freaky book. If you don't like body horror, probably steer clear, but I love this.
That weird growth on his stomach? Oh boy.
Yeah.
Ooh, real creepy.
That's no good. Horrible.
What was the last book you read this week?
I read Breathless, issue 2, also from Black Mask, written by Pat Shand and Renzo Rodriguez. Renzo Rodriguez as the art writer is Pat Shand. Colors by Mara Jane Carpenter and letters by Jim Campbell. And this is a woman who works for a sort of cryptid investigation organization, kills a monster or something, or the monster's dead, and she breathes in something from its lungs, and now she doesn't have asthma anymore, but everyone's dead. And I like this.
Yeah, I started reading it, and I was like, oh, that's right, this book. And I just didn't read the rest of it. But you enjoyed it?
I did. You know, it's a lot, like, there's a lot happens in this issue, and you find out a lot about all of the characters. But I like the voice that this has. I think it's pretty interesting. I think it, like, again, it's a book that has something to say, like, it's all sort of about the medical industry and how much money it costs to stay alive in America. And also there's giant fucking monsters everywhere. It's great.
Wowzers. Cool.
Good fun. Well, I like it. I do like it. I'll be reading those. I think Black Mask are doing some really cool, interesting stuff.
Likewise. And great. They do great printing as well. I love the stock of their paper and the colors. It's awesome.
Absolutely.
Good stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So that is all of our reviews. Those are all of our reviews that you're going to hear this episode. Thank you so much for listening, and especially big thanks to all of you that came to not just Free Comic Book Day at King's, but also Free Comic Book Day in general. Support your local stores, because they're a very vital part of the comic book community, and without them, that we'd be fucked, basically.
Absolutely.
So support your stores.
Support if you the did comic go book there, industry, friends.
If you only got free stuff, go spend some money there, because they mm-hmm. deserve your money.
Absolutely.
For the love of goodness. So I guess that all we need to do now is say that if you want to find us online, you can find us at facebook.com/groups/SeriousIssuesPodcast or on Twitter @serious_issues, individually at SiobhanCBG or at LevDog on Twitter and Instagram. And if you want to support the show, kick in a couple bucks that allows us to dedicate more time to reading comics and talking about them for you, then all you need to do is head to patreon.com/seriousissuespodcast, and just $2 a month will allow you access to a whole bunch of bonus material that we recorded over the past year, and we'll keep adding to throughout the year.
Yeah.
So thank you so much, and
thanks, guys.
Have a good time. Yeah. Remember, everybody, the juice is loose.
Oh God, awful.
Okay, cool. See ya.
Bye.
This podcast is part of the Planet Broadcasting Network.
Visit planetbroadcasting.com for more podcasts from our great mates.
I mean, if you want. It's up to you.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.